Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join. Shop your favorite brands and save. Sephora, Boots, Argus, Temu, Adidas, Trip.com. The list is long. Save online at over 550 stores. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose bank transfer or PayPal. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, get a new outfit. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to rakuten.co.uk or get the app. That's Rakuten. Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join. Shop your favorite brands and save. Sephora, Boots, Argus, Temu, Adidas, Trip.com. The list is long. Save online at over 550 stores. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose bank transfer or PayPal. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, get a new outfit. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to rakuten.co.uk or get the app. That's Rakuten.
Hey everybody, J.J. Cooper, Carlos Collazo, the Baseball America Draft Podcast, and we are back this week really to talk about Mock Draft 3.0. It came out at baseballamerica.com on Monday. I know there was a little bit of talk on it about the Hot Sheet live show that we do on Tuesdays, but we're going to talk about it in more in depth. We're just going to really kind of go through and use it, I would say, as a guide to kind of talk about some of the difficult decisions that teams are having to make. Mm-hmm. And Carlos, great to see you. I'll kind of start with that, right? As you put this together, I'll start with a very open-ended question, which is compared to 2.0, which was a little while ago now, I feel like that there's a lot of, on the college side, there's been a lot of movement because of unfortunate uncertainty, players who are hurt, mm-hmm. players who haven't come back as strongly as we had hoped, players who are struggling. Like, what stood out to you as you put this together? What has changed, you feel like, kind of as we use these kind of to track kind of the movement through the season? What stood out to you?
I feel like this is the first time I felt some confidence that there's a clear group of players at the top of the board that teams just don't expect to fall. I mean, if you look at our last few mock drafts, like our version 1.0, we had Rock, Grady Emerson, 1-2. That's been consistent for all three that we've had. But beyond those names, there has been this sort of mix of players in the top six or seven. I do feel like now there is a top six group of names that just feels very unlikely to slide outside of the top 10. And so for mock draft purposes, that does make it a little bit easier to work yourself down the board. And the six players that I think are in that tier now, in no particular order, I guess I'll go through the mock order that we had on the site. And
in again, a particular order of the mock draft.
Right. There's a lot more details where we have them on the mock draft on the site. So I'd encourage anyone who hasn't actually read that yet to check it out in full. But Rock Chulowski, Grady Emerson, Vaughn Lacky, Jacob Lombard, Jackson Flora, and then Eric Booth Jr. Those feel like the players that for any one of those, and obviously the higher you go up, the less likely they're going to be able to fall down the board. That group just seems really unlikely to slide out of the top 10 at all. It feels like all these players have floors in the 6 to 10 range at worst. The one interesting name in that mix is Gio Rojas, who we had at number 6 to the Royals. I do think just because of the nature of high school pitching and because there are going to be a lot of teams that just are hesitating to take that profile in the top 10. If Gio doesn't go in this top range for a few teams that seem to be in on him, his range down the mock could be wider. And then beyond that, JJ, I really feel like once we get to 8, 9, 10,
throw it open. It could be.
It's like any demographic is in play depending on the team. Like for the Braves, we had a draft chat this week and I had a Braves fan ask, oh, who are the Braves going to do at at number 9 and then at number 26. And I was like, I don't know. If you know, tell me, because I hear the Braves linked to all four major demographics. I think for the Orioles at 7, maybe it's a little bit easier to eliminate some demographics that they just don't tend to draft. But I do think
they took a high school pitcher at 7. I would be, I would be pretty shocked.
I don't view any more clarity in the 8 to 30 range in this mock than I did in mock 2.0, which dropped about a month ago. It's just a different collection of names, like who's posting recently. But we can get more into that if you want.
I did want to ask, like, okay, so you said the top 6, and I don't disagree with you there, but I would actually say, though, like, I do feel like that we've also got a stratification there in some ways, right? Like,
yeah.
Like you talked about it in the mock. I do feel like, okay, I'll ask it this way. Rochelowski obviously is in that top tier. Right. Brady Emerson, we've talked about all years being in that top tier. Has Von Lackey separated himself a little bit from the Lombard, the Booth, the Flora tier below that to move into the third? Or is he more of a guy who fits more in that other tier where it's like Von Lackey could go 3, it's unlikely to go 1 or 2, and he could go 6? Like, is he? Because again, I will say, like, with a, like, when you talk about a Flora, Flora's going to go somewhere we think at the top 6. We also don't expect him to go 1 or 2.
Right. Yeah. I think that's probably, I'd put Von Lackey and Jackson Flora kind of in the same tier. Maybe it's this like secondary tier.
Because I still like Rock and Grady. Like,
yeah. For instance, I don't see a scenario how either Rock or Grady gets beyond 3.
Right. I don't
whereas
either.
No other player in the class I could say that for. And so I think if you're trying to tier it out, it would be Rock and Grady in like a tier of their own. After that, I think it is Von Lackey and then maybe Jackson Flora. I do think Jackson Flora and the two other high schoolers that we have in this elite tier, Jacob Lombard, Eric Booth Jr., those are the guys like I could easily see going a little bit further down. And then I just think Von Lackey position, college pedigree, a lot of safety with the profile overall, maybe the highest floor in this draft class. I've talked to a number of scouts throughout the spring who said, hey, if Von Lackey is just purely an average hitter, hit and power, he still has all-star upside. And I think that ability to create value as a defender at catcher is just going to give him a really high spot on the board. That's like his worst case scenario, essentially. So I do think that like he's probably, I mean, we have him ranked number 3 right now. So that's probably pretty intuitive, but yeah, I do think he's just, it's hard to envision him sliding too far.
We've always talked about, we talk about frequently on this, how teams at the end of the day love to come back to the safety of college bats.
Yeah.
And the crazy part of this is, and we talked on the college podcast this week, like the hard thing to fully fathom with Georgia Tech is like Von Lackey's having a great year. Everyone on Georgia Tech's lineup is having a great year. Their team is basically like a 330, 470, 630.
Right.
Like that's like their team production this year. So like,
it's kind of crazy.
Which is absurd. Like they're the best offense in college baseball. It's not close. But what I would say though is if you took the catching part out of it, if you said that Von Lackey was like a left fielder, right fielder, who's okay out there, he's not going to provide a ton of defensive value, but he's going to be able to play in the outfield. I think as a bat, you would probably feel better about him than a lot of the guys who we're not talking about as like first rounders, but we're talking about guys like, you've got AJ Gracia, you know, at 8. You've got Chris Akopian at 9.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any argument you can make that I'd rather have Chris Akopian, who is really making an argument as a pure bat top 10 pick, who can play second base, but there's some question about that. And you're talking about Von Lackey. He's a better hitter. He's got more power. I would say if you took the defensive value out of it, you'd still want Lackey, and then you throw on top of it, oh, yeah, by the way, Lackey's also should be able to catch for the next 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, I'd be curious what the split of scouts or teams would be if you were just saying, hey, hit power combination, would you rather have Chris Akopian or Von Lackey? Because I do think, like, with Chris Akopian's weaknesses in his profile, questions about where he's going to play, questions about athleticism, questions about the arm, the fact that he still is considered in the top 10, I do think speaks to the strengths that he has as an offensive player. So I imagine you would get maybe more split camp opinions on purely isolating that hit power combination of those two. The one that I found myself really just wondering, okay, why isn't he talked about higher? Why doesn't he go in a better spot? And we have him in the inside the top 10 in this mock draft. But Ryder Helfrich, the Arkansas catcher, I had him tied to the Rockies. I got the sense that the Rockies is maybe one of the earlier possibilities for Helfrich at this stage. But I kind of wonder why that's actually the case, because Ryder Helfrich is having a really good season. There are some scouts who think he's the best defensive catcher in this class. I think I'm probably a little bit partial to Von Lackey. He's just such an elite athlete. But we got split feedback in our preseason poll for scouting directors on who the top defender is in the class before the season started. Helfrich won that category narrowly, actually, over Von Lackey, which was a bit of a surprise to me. But Ryder Helfrich has more raw power than Von Lackey, and you're going to have to take on some of the swing and miss concerns. But when you look at the other college hitting options, college position player options in this class, I just feel like Ryder Helfrich's profile is pretty compelling, because he could also be a plus defender behind the plate, like analytically, and this year.
And he's performed. Just 15 exactly. homers last year, 15 homers this year.
Exactly. So I wonder, like, is this a player who, I mean, we're just now getting him into this range. We've had him mostly in the 10 to 20 range. And I've even talked to some people who are like, oh yeah, maybe he could slide into the 20s. As I look at these profiles and try and compare and contrast them, it really feels unlikely to me that that many teams are going to pass on a potential above average defender with this sort of offensive impact at catcher. We've seen players of this profile go inside the top 10 before, and I don't think that Ryder Helfrich's miss concerns or swing and miss issues are that egregious to warrant him sliding too far in this class. So he's a name that I'm really curious if we continue to hear more in this top end range.
To put it in comparison, again, and I'm not trying to scout the stat line, but I am, like, we are talking about performance in addition to the scouting components of this at all. You've got AJ Gracia, you know, in the mock, he's going above Helfrich. And again, one of these is an outfielder who's solid, you know, but like defensive value is not going to be the giant calling card for Gracia as much as a catcher, right? Like a catcher who's a good defensive catcher. Those are really hard to find. And if you said, like, well, who's having a better season? You could argue Gracia's at the plate's been a little bit better, but they have same, basically similar power. You know, it's something where, yeah, I think Helfrich's one that it's interesting to see kind of like, I'm with you. I'm struggling to get, like, what is it that I'm missing about what is not liked about him? But there is, it seems like, a little bit more skepticism there. Mm-hmm. The other thing is we kind of get into this muddy eight to what?
Well, I'm actually 20, curious, 30? Before we get into the middle, I'm curious if you want to circle back to the Giants at four, because you talked about this. You tried to explain it. I don't know if the Giants themselves have created noise. I kind of framed it that way on the hot sheet, but it's mostly there has been a lot of noise surrounding the Giants and what they might do at four in the wake of their trade with the Guardians, sending Patrick Bailey to Cleveland. They got the 29th overall pick and the slot value and bonus pool money that comes with that pick, in addition to Matt Wilkinson. And basically, as soon as that trade happened, the rumor circuit kicked off, and it was like, oh, could Rock Chulowski stay in California and get to the Giants? And basically, I feel like the last week of my life has been trying to explain why that is so unbelievably unrealistic. Any thoughts on that noise? So, should we just move on?
Yeah, let's just talk about it.
Dial into it.
Let's not spend a lot of time, because again, I don't like.
Yeah,
I don't know how. Even if you were trying, let's say again. Let's just be in the world of the completely hypothetical. This is all hypothetical. There's no reporting to this. This is just throwing it out there, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say that for whatever reason, Rock Chulowski wants to go to the Giants, and there's been, you know, some conversation, whatever, is like, I can get more money for the Giants than anyone else. Let's just say, even like, this is you. So you have to start there to even have an argument for how he falls to four, right? The argument for him to fall to four has to be, what it means is you have to, you have to put out a number that puts enough fear in the teams picking 1, 2, 3 that they won't be able to sign you. Because if you say, I want slot at one, I don't think that that's going to be enough to scare. Like, if I'm the Rays at two and it's like, okay, like, cool, great.
Right.
Sounds great to me. We can do this. I know that'll be a draft bonus record, but that's not like, there's teams here, like, you know, the Rays at two, I will just point out again, have more money to spend than the Giants. right?
Yes.
There's no scenario. You could say, now theoretically, you know, it's like if you said like Rochalowski is a once in a lifetime talent, and we're again, and none of this is reporting. This is
you're laying out the extremes of the situation to like try and get us as close as possible. Here, right?
They're like, we want $14 million. We want to blow away the bonus record effort.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that then you start saying, that might be a little tough to do. Not that again, the Rays can do it. They have 19 mil in their bonus pool. The you know, at one, the White Sox have 17.5 mil. They could do that, but they would probably be reluctant to.
Right.
You would have to like, at the end of the day, even still, if you're at one or two, the only downside of this is it would hold the rest of your class hostage.
Right.
Up to the signing period, right? Because if you're trying to get, again, to map out the 5% scenario of this, it would have to be, okay, a team above them is too afraid to pick him because they know this is going to go right down to the line, you know, wire. We actually think it's a bluff. We think that if we offer him, you know, 11.35, which would be the bonus record with full slot value at one, again, in this hypothetical world, you think that he's going to eventually say yes. But at the same time, as you drafted the rest of your draft, it would become much more difficult to do, because if you don't sign him, you lose that slot value, right? So if you are thinking, again, this becomes a little easier if you think you're going to sign him a slot. If you think you're going to sign him for, the whole deal is if we're going to sign him for $1 million under slot, then it really does become a little bit of holding your draft hostage, because the players that you want to sign with that extra million, you can't sign unless you sign the guy at the top. But I'll just go back to, if you're the Rays at two, if you're the Twins at three, and somehow Rochalowski's on the board, I promise you, I know that the Twins are kind of in a situation right now with kind of a just promoted GM and all this, but like,
well, the Twins are actually one of the most interesting teams for this, because I believe the Twins are one of two organizations that routinely does not go into that 5% overage. So frequent BA listeners will know every team can go 5% over their bonus pool, and there are no penalties outside of paying a bit more tax on that overage. Almost every team regularly dips into that and pushes close to the full 5% if they can. If they don't, it's mostly just like, okay, some guys signed for a little bit less than we were expecting, or the math, we gave ourselves some leeway. But the Twins routinely will not go into that. So that maybe is, it's funny that they're just the number three team in this scenario. But again, White Sox, Rays, Twins all could offer bonus record deals for slot value, and they could all afford to go well over that if they wanted to. And it basically would come down to, do you genuinely think that Rochalowski would pass on a bonus record to not sign with you and go back to school because he didn't make it to the Giants?
Let me throw another way in. If again, this is like, so this is in this weird scenario where somehow he doesn't go one. And I would say also, for if you're the White Sox, if Rochalowski doesn't, if you say we're going to save money on the bonus, not save money as far as spending, but save money to spend elsewhere, and we're going to take Grady Emerson at two, at one instead of two, and then Rochalowski goes out and is JJ Weatherholt, let's just say, in a couple of years, you're running a real risk there as a front office, because your fan base is going to be like, well, this guy's an A-ball.
Two things here that came up with this as I was just talking to people around the industry and trying to lay out like what's most likely here. But I do think that element of, hey, it is far more risky to not take Rochalowski for an organization, for the people who are making these decisions, because if you take Rochalowski and it doesn't work out, you're not going to get a lot of criticism for that pick.
No big
Everyone
deal.
Thinks Rochalowski is the no-brainer option. He's the clear number one guy. He's been that for a year. If you take someone not named Rochalowski and it doesn't pan out, you're going to get crucified by your fan base, by everyone else in the industry. It will require a lot of confidence in your processes and confidence in your job security, potentially, to do that. And I think that is an element that, however much you want to weight it into the decision-making process, is going to be a factor here. And I talked with multiple people who are decision-makers picking near the top of the draft who agreed with this. The other factor that maybe is just worth mentioning, because it does impact like how creating savings might work, playing players off of one another to get a better deal. Rochalowski, Grady Emerson, and Jacob Lombard are all repped by the same agency. So it's not a scenario. And again, I'm not saying that the White Sox are going in here trying to get the best deal they can get. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that to be the case. But if they wanted to do that, it would be incredibly difficult to do so because the agency is not going to play their own players against one another. They're going to try and create the best deals for each one that they can. So that also adds even more of a challenge to get over this hurdle.
And I just want to add the last piece on this is like with the Twins, right? So let's say in some weird world, Rochlowski is still on the board at three. I will tell you right now, the flip side of what you just talked about with the White Sox, the lowest risk failed signing of all time is the Twins at three drafting Rochlowski. The fan base basically that day of, which is a pretty angry fan base a lot of the time, I feel like these days. But that fan base is going to be like, I can't believe we got Rochlowski. The press conference that night, they say, like, do you have a deal in line? It's like, we don't know yet, but we plan to, you know, offer a very competitive offer. We hope to sign him, whatever. In the worst case scenario, and Rochlowski does not sign for you at three, and you get pick four for next year, I do not see there being 1 ounce of blowback from anyone watching that at the fan, you know, the fan base level or anything where it's like, you blew this by not signing Rock. Like they would be like, you are very wise to take that chance. It didn't work out, whatever. He'll go back in the draft next year and we're going to have a massive bonus pool next year. Cool. Right. That's not a down, like that's where it's like, it's just, if the Giants were picking two and they got this, then it would be like, oh, this is going to be interesting because then it would be like, okay, if they have the largest bonus pool, is there a number that the White Sox won't be willing to go? Maybe the Giants would or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just hard to imagine getting to four. So that's our summary of the very top of this, but we're not going to stop at the top. We're going to keep going. There's a lot to dive into in the middle of this round of this mock draft 3.0. And we'll do that right after this quick break.
Kratzy, real simple, man. When you're looking for the best seats available, where are you headed, big dog?
SeatGeek, super easy, because they give us everything you need. You can look at all that. You can look at where you're going to be sitting. I got to sit at a certain spot. I want to be able to see a whole field. I don't need to be close to the field. Got to be a little higher, out of the sun. I'm bougie that way.
Of course you are. And guess what? You have a big family and so do I. So you have to decide right away. You got to do something quick. This is real simple. It's affordable and it's fantastic for a big family like yours and mine to get seats available as soon as possible. Oh, no. Yeah. You need a code. I got that for you too. You can use code Territory10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% of any tickets with promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. Thank you, SeatGeek.
So, Carlos, we're back, and we got kind of down to that 8, 9, 10 range. I kind of want to start. This is going to seem backwards, but I want to start in kind of the 20 range because – I feel like that you get down to 19, 21, 23, 24. Like the thing that stands out about this, you have like on the mock draft right now, we have Derek Curiel going to the Guardians at 19. We have Justin LeBron going to the Padres at 21. We have Mason Edwards going to the Cubs at 23. We've got Logan Redmond going to the Mariners at 24. And there's other guys we could talk. Ace Reese to the Mets at 27. I bring Liam Peterson to the Astros at 28. I bring all these up because these are almost across the board. Mason Edwards is not. That's a rising guy. But a lot of these guys are guys who at some point this season, and I'd say even as you wrote up in the mock, most of the names we just mentioned there, if someone took one of those guys at 10, 11, we wouldn't be like floored, shocked, stunned. That's what I just wanted to lay out and kind of kick it to you is how much – variance, eye of beholder, uncertainty there is where it does feel like if you are picking 8 and you are picking 22, I don't feel like you have that comfort level that the guy you pick at 8 is a lot better than the guy you could pick at 22.
That exact sentiment has been expressed to me directly by teams picking in these ranges. Teams at the top of that range may be a little bit disappointed that that's the case, and teams picking at the back with extra picks kind of thinking, hey, however this winds up, we're going to get a talent comparable to a back of the top 10 talent. So depending on where you're at, it's either a positive or a negative. But in terms of projecting the first round, it does lead to a lot of uncertainty. And it also means that if you're tracking kind of the movement of players in our mock drafts throughout the spring, players are, it's framed as like players rising and falling, but I don't really believe there's as much of that consistent tracking as much as it's just like, hey, there are teams in this range, 10 to 15 on the board, who are interested in these profiles. After this range, teams are interested in other profiles. And so the players who we had initially in that 10 to 15 spot, whether they're really model heavy kind of profiles that that model teams like, or whether they're really toolsy that the model teams maybe want to avoid and the traditional scouting teams are more inclined to take. Like, I do think that, and also I think we talked about this a lot throughout the spring, there's just huge variance in how one team thinks of a play. Like AJ Gracia, who we mentioned, I think is a great example of this. I've heard that AJ Gracia is being scouted by all the teams in the back of the top 10 pretty seriously. And then I've also heard from some teams who wouldn't take him in the first round, period. And I think there are a lot of players like that in this draft. Justin LeBron may be the pinnacle example of this. There are a few potential landing spots still for him inside the top 10. But then you also look at his performance, what he's done this year, what he's done for the last 3 years. And understandably, there are some teams that just think there's too much hit tool risk. They're not going to take him. And so placing Justin LeBron has been one of the biggest challenges in the draft, and also sorting out this like the college players in this class feel almost more unsettled than the high school crop, which is strange to say, but I do think it's true, because there are a group of high school players, starting with Gio Rojas, Trevor Condon, Jared Greinlinger, all those guys, I feel pretty comfortable about them going somewhere in the middle of the first round. That's not the case for the college players. And for the college players, it really is a weekly, are you posting? Who's performing down the stretch? And I think that does matter with this year's group.
We have Logan Redman right now, 24 to the Mariners. And you lay out in the explainer in that. And that's why it's, again, very useful to go to baseballamerica.com.
To read. Reading is
to useful. Read this. Because, again, like, one thing I'll say about this is this: when this draft rolls around, right? Again, I get it. People look at mocks and like, okay, did you get the pick right? Right?
Yeah.
Justin LeBron's a perfect example of this. You just laid out. Wherever you put Justin LeBron in your final mock, the error bars, the variance, like 25
picks of variance,
right, is like literally 25 picks. Mm. So if you mention him for a team at 8, but you don't put him there, or 9, and then he goes 8, you could be like, oh, you know, no, we absolutely heard that that was a possibility. We also know that there's a possibility. And by the way, the other part of this is there's the bonus component of this too. If you are Justin LeBron, you know, representatives, and a team in the top 10 is willing to pick you, and they're saying, but you're going to take a haircut at this spot, that haircut looks really good potentially. Mm-hmm. Because
yep,
the haircut at 8, the haircut at 9, the haircut at 10 is better than the slot as you get to, you know, like 22.
Well, I think that is an excellent point to make, and maybe hammer home as we close out here. I do think the way this draft has unfolded this year is going to lend itself towards teams all over the place hunting bargains, because if you don't view separation with where you're, it's essentially like trading back in the draft. That's what it's like in other classes. But if you don't think your player, the top player on your board, if you're picking 10, is much different than player 15, you're going to be hunting for deals, because you want to create savings with an equivalent talent with your first pick, push that towards players you like later on, get a bigger, bulkier, more talented class. Overall, I think that is going to become a huge factor, whether that's with college players who have maybe not performed to the level that they expected themselves to, whether that's with high school players that are just the more typical underclock kind of bonus pool manipulation plays with high school hitters. I think that could be the case with this entire group of high school pitchers. That could be the case. Every year we talk about how, oh, teams are hunting deals as we approach the draft, but especially this year, I think that could create a lot of chaos and variance through the board, because teams will 100% be trying to find those deals.
With Logan Redman, like we just laid out, like the variance and the error bars on him right now are so wide because Logan Redman is not pitching at this moment. Now, if Logan Redman, who UCLA has said, now again, I could go into a whole thing about how if you are UCLA, they have every incentive right now with the seeding committee coming, the rankings and national seeds and all that. There is no upside. Again, please understand, pure speculation here, not reporting. I'm not saying Logan Redman's hurt. He's not going to pitch again this year. I'm saying if that was the case, though, UCLA has no incentive to actually spell that out because that might be the difference between them being the number one national seed and not. We have seen this in multiple college tournament seedings that, you know, we saw it in football a couple years ago where Florida State was undefeated, but they lost their quarterback. And because they knew he was out for the year, like, nope, you don't make it into the playoff. We've seen it in basketball where it's like, yes, I know that they had the resume to do it, but look what happened since they lost their star player. They're not nearly as good. I'm not saying that but I'm saying, like, if Logan Redmond doesn't pitch the rest of the year, obviously I would say where you have him at 24, it might be even the aggressive side potentially. Mm-hmm. At the same time, if Logan Redmond, like, comes back and pitches throughout the entirety of the postseason and leads UCLA to Omaha and has a Rhett Lauder or a Paul Skeens, like, you know, or a mm-hmm. Gage Wood like effort in Omaha.
Yeah, Gage Wood and Cade Horton
is way too low, you right. know, like, for where he'll be. But we just don't know right now. Like, that's a guy where it's like, we are in May, but who knows what's going to actually, like, on the field happen and how mm-hmm. that's going to affect this. Like, if we were talking 5 weeks ago, which we were, about Tegan Coombs, it would have been like, yeah, I mean, I don't think that he's been as disappointing right. as maybe it's being made out to be. We're coming off of a week where Tegan Coombs looks like, is this guy going to end up being the number two guy in this class from the college pitching side?
The college pitching really has been like, okay, whose turn is it this week? That's really how it's felt a lot the last several weeks. And I imagine for everything, all the reasons you just laid out there, I think it continue to be the case moving forward. Because Cam Flukey, if he comes back and starts pitching well, he could easily be like, oh, Cam Flukey, we'll put him right in that range.
But right now, he's not.
Exactly. So it's going to come down to health. It's going to come down to performances down the stretch. It's going to come down to who shoves in the big outings when all the scouting heat is in to watch you for conference tournaments, into regionals. It's going to be fascinating to track, and we'll try and keep you guys up to date with everything that's going on and how the board is shaking out as we move up to the draft. This is 3.0. I think we tend to get to 6 or 7 total. The frequency will be increasing here as we get a little bit closer. So they're a pain to do. They're a struggle to do. I want to express just the amount of uncertainty that does come once we get outside of the top 10. But we are talking to as many people as we can and trying to put together a best forecast for the first round. So
that's the useful thing to lay out here, right? Like, the mock draft, I get it. That's why we're saying you need to read the reporting that is in there is more important in a lot of cases than the name, right? Because you're laying out that right now there are so many players that you have, especially when we get in the 20s on this list, the 30s on this list, where you're like, this guy could end up being a second pick guy for a team with a lot of bonus pool,
right?
Or he could be a first pick guy for a team picking higher but with low bonus pool. And
yeah,
the thing with a lot of that is we're talking about guys where it's like, okay, we just laid it out. You said, like, there's a lot of almost like trading down that's happening, right? Yeah. Like, if you are picking at the top 10, especially the back of that top 10, and you're like, there's no one here who, like, we are absolutely shopping for the best combination of talent and deal we can find because we think that there are 10 guys who aren't that different as far as how we line them up on our board. Well, the second part of that very much is, and we've got a supplemental first round pick, or we pick very high in the second round or whatever. Like, the way you laid it out to bring it back to the Giants, like, okay, yeah, Rochlowski not getting the 4. But if you get a Logan Schmidt with that pick that you just picked up,
mm-hmm.
you've now, if you say, well, what did you, I mean, like, lay that out for someone, like, if you are the Giants and in this scenario, as you lay it out, so yeah. at 4, they get Lombard, right? And yep. so, which is a top of the draft talent. That is not that you've gone cheap or anything like that. We just said mm-hmm. he is 100% in that top tier.
Yep.
But they now have money to spend. And at 29, they're landing another guy who's really another, not just first round talent, but mm-hmm. clear first round talent, right?
Yeah, Logan Schmidt is a guy who I think has real landing spots anywhere in the 10 to 30 range. And so if you're getting a guy in Jacob Lombard who has some of the biggest pure upside in this class overall, and then you're pairing that with a top 3 high school pitcher in the class in Logan Schmidt, I mean, Gio Rojas, Brody Bimila seem to be ahead of him in terms of left-handed pitching, but I really don't think the talent gap between those two is significant to Logan Schmidt. He's been tremendous all spring. He throws hard. He's done a nice job improving his secondaries. I think this is you're basically picking up this pick, and I mean, it kind of makes sense. You pick 29, they have multiple first-round picks. You wind up with multiple first-round talents, but without this trade, if you're the Giants, you're probably never sniffing Logan Schmidt because he's probably going to go in between their first and second round pick. So I think that is just the much more likely scenario of how the Giants are going to create value with this trade in this draft. So that was just one potential scenario.
Okay. Couple more, like, to get it back to we're going through all, before we wrap up there, the other thing that we're going to look at is there are there are college guys who could go at the back of this, into that 30 to 40 range, who are still really hard to line up. And we'll do that after this one more break.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join. Shop your favorite brands and save. Sephora, Boots, Argus, Temu, Adidas, Trip.com. The list is long. Save online at over 550 stores. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose bank transfer or PayPal. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, get a new outfit. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to rakuten.co.uk or get the app. That's Rakuten. Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join. Shop your favorite brands and save. Sephora, Boots, Argus, Temu, Adidas, Trip.com. The list is long. Save online at over 550 stores. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose bank transfer or PayPal. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, get a new outfit. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to rakuten.co.uk or get the app. That's Rakuten.
So, Carlos, we get to the very back of this list, the 30s. There are guys in this list who I feel like are still very hard to line up. Jared Avicula at Georgia Tech is kind of a, I would say, performance over tools, skills over tools kind of guy. He's hitting 432. It's hard to hit 432 in the ACC. He doesn't strike out. At the same time, he's not particularly physical. He's not particularly, he's not a second baseman. You're like, well, he's playing second base, but you could really slide him back over to short in pro ball kind of thing. I feel like, though, when I see him at pick 37 in the mock, I feel like that's getting a guy like that, where you got Rockies at 37 getting him. Getting for the Dodgers, you have Dodgers getting Eric Becker, who you kind of throw in that same group too. Mm-hmm. Eric Becker was a guy coming into the year was thought to be very much a potential first round pick.
Right.
Tools are not that, loud there either. You got Daniel Jackson also going to the Rockies. Like, the Rockies have a lot of picks back here. I feel like those are three guys who all are, for different reasons, kind of maybe Avicula and Jackson more than Becker. I think kind of know a little bit that Becker is kind of, but is Avicula, is he a range of outcomes guy, or is it something where the lack of tools probably means he's going to be that 30 to 40 range guy?
No, I've definitely heard that he could go inside the first round and in the back of the first round. And I think that when you're looking around at the just lack of college hit tools in this class, this is an area where he has a clear advantage on most players. If you wanted to say that Jared Avicula had the best pure hit tool in this college class. I think that is a defensible take to have. And if you believe that, you think, okay, well, he maybe isn't the most toolsy player in the world, but he's a college middle infielder. We think he's going to play a premium defensive position. We think he can play that position fine. He's not going to have a ton of power, but if you look around at the hitters that do have power in this class, there's just a lot of hit concerns, hit risks. And if you're a team that just does not want to take on hit risk with your first round pick, if you want to feel safe and comfortable that you're getting a player who's going to be productive, I think Jarynad Vinkula at a certain stage becomes really appealing. I think generally he could easily go inside the 20s. And I think that's probably also the case with Daniel Jackson. Maybe have a little bit more tools there, different profile entirely. But these are two college performers who, just because we have them right outside of the 30s, does not mean I can't envision a scenario where they're going higher. I really think it's the case for everyone that we have, maybe outside of Luke Williams. I think Luke Williams at number 32 to the Cardinals is more of like, hey, I want to kind of associate Luke Williams with the Cardinals. They have a ton of picks as well. They could get creative in how they order their players, kind of like the Braves did a year ago with overslot and underslot deals. Luke Williams maybe would be a little bit surprising, but every other player that's mentioned here in the 30s, including the college guys, folding in the high school guys, we've got players like Aiden Ruiz, shortstop out of New York to the Yankees. Maybe the
Hunter Dietz, who you've in your write-up, you say, like, it's not crazy to think the Hunter Dietz could go significantly higher than that.
No, like, it was even the case where, like, I had Hunter Dietz in this 30s range on my board, and I was like, man, like, I feel like this is too low. And I'm like asking around, like, hey, should I have Hunter Dietz higher at this stage? And some people are like, yeah, you should. Other people are like, no, like, given his medical questions, like, that fits there. So I just feel like this maybe is just reiterating the variance of this class as a whole. I don't think it stops at 30. I think it's expanded down maybe into the 40s. There are even players that are not on this mock. Bo Lawrence is maybe the most obvious one in South Carolina. I think Bo Lawrence is going to be really hard to sign out of college, but I also think he's being scouted in a range where I don't know exactly what his number is, but there are teams all throughout the back half of the first round that are scouting him really heavily for their first pick. So there's just a huge collection of players that have a large range. Well,
Okay, last question I'll ask you then kind of summarizes this. I feel like that this is 100% a draft where it's like, okay, if you said, where do you want to be in this draft? Ideal world, picking one or two. That's the first part, because yeah, I do feel like that we have a very clear top two who are considered top talents. But more than that, like, if you don't have that, which not a lot of teams have that, it's better to have like three picks in the 20 to 45 range than it is to have a pick in the in the 8 to 10 range. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think if you specifically say the 8 to 10 range, once you get there, I'd rather have the volume for all the reasons we mentioned. I think for me, it's top three. Like, if I can get Chalowski or Emerson or Lackey, and maybe I could even expand it out to the top five or six, because I do think that top tier has separated themselves. Yeah, once you're outside of that range, you probably do just want more picks, more bonus pool money, so you can take more shots at a lot of these guys who are difficult to separate. I think that's probably fair. Cardinals being a pretty good drafting situation.
Again, like I said, Rockies pick back-to-back there.
Rockies, yeah. Yep. Rockies picking at 10, and then what is it, 36 and 7?
37 and 38.
37 and 8, yeah. You know, yeah, like, no, I think they could be in a good situation there.
You know, the Rays have, you know, like, they're back at 33 after picking at 2, so they can do a little bit of both of this.
Mm-hmm.
He said Pirates have a lot of picks. Like, there's, you know, there are some teams that kind of fit that. And that's, but that is a perfect way to wrap this up on the Baseball America Draft Podcast for this week. We're getting closer. Still 2 months, though. I mean, we say we're getting closer.
It drags on, doesn't it?
Calibrated to the old draft, where it's like we're getting crit to conference tournament time, and like
it might feel like it drags on for some people, or it's getting fat. It always feels like it's imminent because there's so much we have to do before then. So it does speed up for me. So I'm grateful for the time, even though the timing is still kind of annoying.
I will never forget being at the ACC tournament in, I guess it would have been 2018, I think it was. And where there was like, oh, there are five catchers here who could go high. And Will Smith kind of like earned himself a good bit of money that week, because he really did look like the best, but he was kind of coming from further off, right? Mm-hmm. He wasn't Zach Collins, you know, or, you know, there were a couple other guys, like there were multiple first round pick catchers in that, but Will Smith kind of moved himself up. It was a great reminder to me of like, this is like really an important time coming up from a draft perspective, because if you can really do something that stands out in the next few weeks, it has a little bit more resonance than if you did it in February or March.
Yep.
These are pressure pack situations in games that really matter. And with a whole lot of people, like there will be a lot of people in Charlotte at the ACC tournament. There will be a lot of people in Alabama, you know, at Hoover, you know, covering the, a lot of scouts will be there for the SEC tournament. A lot of these tournaments, but I would say those are the two where even more than most, there will be like wall to wall, like decision makers, because you can see a lot of first, second, third round talents in one spot. It's a very efficient way to do it, even if there always generally does seem to be a lightning delay or two, especially in
SEC. That's true. Yeah.
That pushes a game till like 2 a.m. or whatever. But that was our draft podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Please do, you know, leave comments. Again, we love the comments. I've been trying to respond to as many as I can on the YouTube channel, but also we appreciate all of our podcast listeners as well. And obviously check out all the content over at baseballamerica.com. So much is going on right now. So much we have a new updated top 100 with a new number one now. And we keep adding players. We've added some notable names and some notable rising prospects to the top 100. We have, as you're listening to this, we are finishing up updating our top 30s for all 30 organizations. Those will roll out next week as we record this. So the week of conference tournament play in the draft for college conference tournament play. And we are working on updating. We are working on writing reports to get to 500 for this year's draft. But also, Carlos and the team is busy at work on updating our 27 and 28 lists as well. So much stuff going on at baseballamerica.com. Thank you again for joining us. For Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.